This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Sometime this fall, the Defense Department is expected to activate the first site of a long-anticipated U.S. missile defense system. Five missiles are already in place in underground silos in central Alaska, with one more due in probably by mid-October. The missiles are designed to protect the nation from attack by catching warheads headed for U.S. soil. That is, if they work. Many questions remain about the effectiveness of these programs and their necessity in a post-Soviet landscape. This hour, we'll discuss these issues and hear from proponents and critics of missile defense. We'll also talk to a defense expert about how to test these systems. And we want to hear from you. Call us with your questions about missile defense. Will you feel safer once these programs become operational? What will it take to convince you that the system works? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now to discuss the administration's plan is John Donnelly, a defense reporter for Congressional Quarterly. He joins us here in Studio 3A in Washington. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
So these missiles in Alaska they're not actually operational yet. I mean, they will be switched on sometime this year?
That's the plan, yes. I think they're going to have about 8 in the ground by the end of this year. And they're going to conduct some kind of assessment of their readiness for combat. And so by the end of this year, the goal is to say that they are ready to go should North Korea, which is the threat they have in mind, decide for some reason to launch a missile at the United States.
So we might as well get to it right away. You said they're going to test the readiness for combat. Now, if you've already put these in the ground, I mean, obviously they're not going to launch them to test their readiness for combat. So what are they going to do?
Well, I mean, I don't know all the details of the review that they're undergoing. They just have to make sure that all the systems are ready to go. No, they're not going to pull them out of the ground and test them. But they just have to basically go through a checklist. And I'm not sure, you know, to what extent that is completely technical or based on other factors. But I assume it's mostly a technical matter.
Right, right. Now, exactly, I mean, I said that these are missiles that are supposed to be launched in the event that a missile is heading this way. Can you describe the system? I mean, obviously, there's got to be some long-range detection, and is there a decision? I mean, can you go and run through what has to happen for these to work?
Sure. Basically, should a country like North Korea fire a missile, we have satellites that are able to detect the heat from such a launch. And those satellites would then send their track on that missile to a ground-based battle management computers, and then it would tell the missile when to launch, and it would launch from either Alaska or California, where they're also going to put some missiles, and in the future, by the way, in an undetermined site in Europe. The rocket would take off, and it would basically go to a basket in space, and then in the end game, it would let loose a so-called kill vehicle, which would autonomously track the reentry vehicle, the bad guy's warhead, and by force of kinetic energy, by force of impact, obliterate the enemy's warhead high in space.
And so, I mean, do you get one rocket per in? I mean, is it a one for one? If they launch one, we launch one, or do they launch one, we launch six, or something?
The actual number that we launch is classified, but it's several, and it is basically in case we miss, we want to have the opportunity to get a second shot at it. So for every threat missile, we want to have say four or five of our own to launch.
Now, this is not the Star Wars defense shield that's the nickname it got that President Reagan first talked about. What are the differences?
Well, President Reagan envisioned a shield that would be able to defend the entire United States from thousands of incoming Soviet warheads. This is a far, far more limited version of that vision, which would be able to intercept, say, a handful of of ICBMs that could be fired from North Korea and possibly Iran.
And is this it at the moment? I mean, is this system the thrust of the U.S. ballistic missile defense program, or are there more things as well?
There are a lot more things. Uh-huh. In fact, this ground-based system is really they want to have 40. They're starting with 8 at the end of this year. They want to have 40 in the ground by about 2009 in Alaska, L.A., and Europe. But that's only one initial element of it. They're also working on sea-based interceptors can be launched from ships, a laser that can be fired from a 747, and possibly down the road, or I should say probably down the road, they'll be talking about space-based interceptors, satellite-launched missiles, and that sort of thing. So, and it's designed to just intercept not just ICBMs, but missiles of all ranges all around the world. So it's probably the most complicated system that the Defense Department has ever tried to build.
And all targeted at North Korea, or many? I mean, anybody who thinks about getting a ballistic missile to shoot at us, we would be ready.
Yes, and not just the longer range ICBMs. Also, there are a plethora of systems being designed, like the more along the lines of the Patriot system of Gulf War fame or infamy, depending on how you look at it, because there were questions about how effective that system was. In any event, I'm talking about shorter-range systems to defeat sort of Scud-type missiles, the smaller versions of the ICBMs.
Okay. We're talking with John Donnelly. He's a defense reporter with Congressional Quarterly about missile defense, and we'd like to hear from you. Our number is 800-989-8255. And let's take a call from Richard in Corvallis, Oregon. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Question.
Yeah, the question is, why are we bogged down in talking about little technical niceties of this thing when in fact the larger issues are, one, this is the most colossal boondoggle the military-industrial complex has ever had, and it's conclusive proof of the military-industrial complex because it benefits no one else. There's a logical impossibility to the whole thing. It just means that all the other side has to do, as long as it's 99% effective, 99% effective, there's still 1% of ineffectiveness or leakage. And that 1% makes this thing absurd because that just means that the other side has to build more missiles if they wanted to shoot more missiles at us, and that would be a larger number, that 1%. But the main thing is no one is going to be stupid enough, suicidal enough, to shoot a missile at us and immediately identify themselves. There's just too many other ways they could get at us without identifying themselves and being wiped out in the process.
Well, Richard, I mean, I'd like to ask John Donnelly, what about that? This is not, you know, is this effectively intended as a deterrent, or is it actually supposed to stop things? And, you know, if it's not completely effective, do people still say it has an important role?
Well,
Richard, I'd like to wait and let John Donnelly answer the question. Go ahead.
Well, it is intended to be able to intercept the missiles, and it's also, to give the advocates their say, it's also considered to be a deterrent to keep a country from thinking about building missiles to begin with, if they know that there's at least a chance that they're going to be intercepted. And just to give the advocates their say on this, they would argue that as long as there is a possibility that a North Korea could launch a missile at the United States, the harm is so significant that any degree to which we might be able to defend ourselves is preferable to no defense.
So, what about the other point that this is, you know, the product of the military-industrial complex? I mean, this is something they're happy to comply with. Is there some sense that they've been pushing very hard? I note that a lot of the supporters of the program are senators and congressmen from states that have a large financial interest. But can you parse that at all for us?
Well, certainly that's an element of any weapons system debate. Yes. Obviously, there are companies that do this that are making a lot of money, and they're pushing hard for it. And they give big campaign contributions to a lot of the senators and congressmen that advocate this system. So that's a big part of it. But that's a part of any big weapons debate.
Well, we're going to hear from one of the supporters of this system in just a few minutes. But right now, we hear from a critic of the current administration's missile defense program. With us now by phone from his office in Washington, D.C. is Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat from Rhode Island, and a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Senator, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
So what are your main critiques of the president's plan? Does it have any value at all, do you think?
Well, there's a value to developing in a systematic and thorough way a missile defense system. That's not what the administration is doing. They are trying to deploy a system that has not been effectively tested, and there's also the question of priorities. They're spending $10 billion this year on missile defense. That's roughly twice the budget of the Customs and Border Protection Service and almost twice the budget of the Coast Guard. And frankly, the gravest threats that face us today are not from missiles launched to fly intercontinentally. It's from terrorists who will cross our borders, as some suggest they already have, and plant a weapon of mass destruction. So from a resource perspective, from a policy perspective, I think they've got it wrong. But from a simply a procedural, operational perspective of getting it tested first before you deploy it, they've got it totally out of whack. The president announced the decision to deploy in December of 2002. That was several days after a test's failure, even though the test was highly scripted. And since that time, they've canceled seven tests. Amazes me how you can't test the system because of its complexity, but yet you can say it works because it's deployed.
Well, the question, it seems to me, though, is you have to decide at some point you've gone far enough in the testing, and you could argue that each test leads to another round of revisions to the way the system is built, which leads to another round of tests, and you never get anything in the ground. I mean, how do you deal with that problem?
Well, you deal it the way we dealt with every other major weapons system. You have the Office of Test and Evaluation, an independent testing agency in the Department of Defense, to design the scenario so they're realistic. To go ahead and evaluate the tests, make recommendations. The Pentagon has completely abandoned that approach. They make up their own rules, they make up their own tests, and what seems to be in the case of missile defense, one test leads to a cancellation, leads to another cancellation, leads to another cancellation. But just the simple logic, you don't have enough confidence to test the system in a highly scripted way, yet you're going to try to suggest to the American public that this thing works operationally, that you can put it in the hands of warfighters and the warfighters will be able to operate it. This real question is not only about the missiles in the ground, but the whole apparatus of early warning out of radars, command and control. Who will fire this if suddenly, you know, we get an alert that there's a missile's been launched? And the issue also about, you know, the threat, a missile attack leaves a huge signature. If the North Koreans are foolish enough to launch a missile, we will be able to deter them. And in fact, I think they know that. And as a result, our offensive power is the best deterrence against them at the moment.
What about, just very briefly, Senator, is there a system, should we be building anything at this point at all, or should we be thinking about anything, or is missile defense an idea from the last century?
No. Missile defense is an idea that should be pursued thoroughly, responsibly. It should be subject to the same kind of operational testing and evaluation that we do. If we can deploy a system that's effective, then we should. But part of that is not just, you know, deploying something. There's always this inevitable cost-benefit analysis. How much will it cost? The administration refuses to tell us how much a full-blown system will cost. Is it $60 billion or is it $100 billion over a decade? These are large numbers, and every time we invest in missile defense, we don't invest in other systems and other types of protections. So this blind sort of sense of we're just going to build this system is not, I think, appropriate. It's not strategically sound. But should we be in a very deliberate research project and try to develop this system? Sure, we should.
Senator, can you hold for just one moment? We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back.
Sure.
Okay, we're talking about missile defense, and we're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We'll be back in a minute. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington. We're talking about missile defense and what the Bush administration is doing to establish an operational system. Our guests are John Donnelly, a defense reporter for Congressional Quarterly. He joins me here in Studio 3A in Washington, and on the phone from his office is Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat from Rhode Island and member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. And I wonder if I can talk to – I would like to take one of your calls. Our number here is 800-989-TALK, and our email is totn@npr.org. I'd like to ask Dennis in Bethesda, Maryland, to come on the line and ask a question. Dennis, welcome to the program.
Hi. I actually would like to say something a little positive, a little balanced. It's okay in tests like this to – first of all, it's a good idea to have the missiles in the silos and test the system itself. But secondly, the ability to replace electronics and software and radar detectors these days allows those systems to be replaced as long as the propulsion systems work. And our propulsion systems are pretty good. Now, I absolutely hate the Bush administration, but there are some things about this which do make sense. One is that if there is a limited number of people who fire single warhead missiles, and if this system really does get improved, the ability to shoot those down, then there is a very small limited market against terrorist types of missiles.
Okay, Dennis, I think that's an interesting point. I want to ask the senator what he makes of that.
Well, the notion of having missiles on the ground to test is something that is a positive aspect, but there's a big difference between classifying a facility as an operational test bed, which I think it is, and calling it a deployed missile system capable of responding on a, I presume, routine basis to an attack. That's the biggest difference, I think. I think, you know, testing it in the ground, doing those things, realistic testing, is appropriate. There's also problems with the Alaska test bed in terms of whether it can actually fire missiles in an operational test capacity because of environmental restrictions, because of also the radar sightings. And so what I object to strenuously is pretending this is a deployment when, in fact, it might have some value as an operational test facility. That, in a sense, I agree. One of the problems with this system is that it seems to me that sort of outfoxing it is probably easier than staying ahead of an aggressor. If there are multiple missiles coming our way, I'm told the system would not perform that well. If the decoys are sophisticated on the missile system, we've just designed this at this point for rudimentary decoys. I have no objection to testing. I have no objection to trying to develop a system. But to stand up and say this is working and suggest that this is part now a reliable part of our defense is, I think, exaggeration.
All right. Senator, thank you very much for joining us today. Senator Jack Reed is a Democrat from Rhode Island and member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. He joined us from his office in Washington, D.C. by telephone. John Donnelly from Congressional Quarterly is still here in Studio 3A. And I'm just wondering... how much of this, it hasn't become an election issue so much. Do you have any sense that it was an election issue last time, or has this just not gotten, it's just, if you want to use the phrase, gotten off America's radar, maybe that's the wrong thing to use with a missile defense system, but are people just not thinking about it anymore?
Yeah, it is definitely, it's ironic that at the point in history when this system is for the first time about to be deployed, the debate has waned, even as the significance has waxed. And as to why, well, there are a few theories out there. I mean, I think both Bush and Kerry have reason to avoid the subject if they're trying to appeal to more middle-of-the-road, so-called swing voters. Each side could alienate them by either Bush by touting it or Kerry by criticizing it too much when at a time when defense is considered to be unquestioningly approved by a lot of middle of the road voters. But yeah, it definitely has lost its significance. I think a lot of it has to do with the end of the Cold War. I mean, this was a real classic Cold War issue between the United States and the Soviet Union. And when the ABM Treaty, when Bush pulled us out of the ABM Treaty, that kind of took a lot of the zing out of the arguments on both sides. But it's still an important issue. I mean, we're talking about $10 billion a year here, and we're talking about whether or not we are going to really be defended against a potential threat. And, even in Pentagon terms, $10 billion is a lot of money. And there's definitely valid questions as to whether or not there's adequate oversight as to how that money's spent.
Okay. We've had a lot of questions this hour about whether or not we're going to be able to test this system, and there is one person who's addressed those questions in the past. The science of testing is tricky business, but here to explain it, how it actually works, is Philip Coyle, senior advisor for the Center for Defense Information and the chief weapons tester for the Pentagon from 1994 to 2001. He joins us by phone from his home in Los Angeles, California. Mr. Coyle, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
So how do you test this kind of missile, test a missile like the ones that that are being deployed in Alaska now?
You launch a target from someplace like Vandenberg Air Force Base in California, that's right on the coast, out over the Pacific Ocean, and you try to shoot it down with an interceptor missile that's launched from Kwajalein, an atoll out in the southern part of the Pacific Ocean.
And there have been some of these tests done, isn't that correct?
Yes, there've been eight of them so far. Five worked, three didn't, including the most recent one about almost 2 years ago.
I see. And so when you have three consecutive tests that don't work, from a tester's point of view, does that say, well, we learned so much by our failures that we can go forward, or does that say you have to test some more?
Well, the three were not consecutive. They didn't necessarily all fail in a row, but there have been three failures. And indeed, you do learn something from each test. But more important, so far all of the tests have been highly scripted and artificial, with targeting aids that you wouldn't have in a real engagement. As a result, the system has no demonstrated capability to defend the United States against a real attack under realistic conditions.
We're talking about missile defense system. My guest this hour, Philip Coyle, from a senior advisor for the Center for Defense Information. And here in the studio is John Donnelly from Congressional Quarterly. And let's take a call. I'd like to go to John in Annapolis, Maryland. John, welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm a historian, and I've done a lot of research on the early defensive systems of the Cold War, primarily the Nike Bomarc missiles, which were all morphed into anti-missile systems. And I listened to the efficacy discussions about these missiles and also the multiple targeting issues, and I always kind of have to say that's a little humorous. Even the old missiles issued back in the 1950s all the way through the 70s all used small-yield nuclear weapons, around 30 kilotons. And to think that these newer missile systems wouldn't is kind of goofy. And if you think about the fact that if this weapon was tipped with a small-yield nuclear weapon, all of these measurement issues that they've been discussing, about three didn't quite hit the missile down, all you need to do is get a nuclear weapon within about a quarter mile of these targets, and they're all gone. So,
okay. Well, John, thanks for that. Let me get John Donnelly to respond to that briefly. Go ahead, John.
Well, my understanding is that one of the reasons that they abandoned the nuclear option and went to these so-called hit-to-kill interceptors is that it was not practical. It blinded the electromagnetic pulse from the nuclear blast, blinded the system's radars, not to mention the damage it would have done to civilian society. So, I mean, I could be mistaken, but my understanding is that that was abandoned, and for good reason, many years ago.
Philip Coyle, maybe, as I understand it, these are what are called kinetic energy weapons, or it's just they're supposed to hit, smack on, and destroy. There's no blast from them, is there?
That's correct. These are supposed to be hit-to-kill intercept. John from Annapolis is correct. We did try to deploy anti-missile systems years ago, about 30 years ago, one that had a nuclear bomb on it with 5 megaton yield, a huge thing. But the current systems are hit to kill, which makes it actually much harder. It's like in golf, hitting a hole in one when the hole is going 15,000 miles an hour.
Yeah, I can see it's a technical tour de force. But then we've managed to to launch rockets at Mars, which is several million miles away, and hit a tiny spot. So I guess the technology may exist. I want to remind our listeners that we're waiting to hear from Representative Kurt Weldon. He's a representative from the 7th District in Pennsylvania and vice chairman of the House Armed Services Committee and one of the chief proponents of a missile defense system in Congress. But so far we haven't been able to get through to the congressman, but we're hoping to have him, so we'll bring him on as soon as we make contact with him. Now I'd like to go to Alan in Alan in Lancaster. I keep pressing the wrong button. I'll get it. There. Alan in Lancaster, Ohio. Welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you.
What's your question?
One of your guests said at the beginning of your program that the system is autonomous, and my question is, if it's autonomous and it makes a mistake, what's the worst-case scenario? What if it misses? What if it makes a mistake? What if it hits land or people?
Phil Coyle, quick answer on that?
There's so little time for these engagements that they basically, the systems have to be autonomous, but if it missed, it would land on its target anyway. However, the current system that's being deployed has no demonstrated capability, so it's the same thing as missing.
Okay. Mr. Coyle, can you stay on the line while we talk to Representative Weldon, because I gather we have him now by phone?
Of course.
Okay. Then one of Congress's biggest backers of missile defense is Congressman Kurt Weldon, a Republican from Pennsylvania's 7th District and vice chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. He joins us by phone from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be with you.
And so, Congressman, we've been hearing some of the criticisms of this system, the testing that has not been... Well, you couldn't say it's been 100% positive, and the concerns that the system may not be operational once it is actually switched on. What do you say to that?
Well, the people who are criticizing for lack of testing were the same ones who opposed testing all during the 90s because they said it would violate the ABM treaty, would send wrong signals. They can't have it both ways. The fact is we have the capability, we have the technology, we know it can be accomplished. It's now just an engineering challenge. The best scientists in the world have been working on this capability, and we're going to give ourselves a protection that the Russians have had for the past 30 years under the ABM treaty. They've had the only operational ABM system around Moscow. They've upgraded it four times. System's still in place, and we're going to give ourselves that capability with this system, as limited as though it is. It's an initial capability.
But as I understand it, even the Pentagon has admitted that their tests have been failures. Doesn't that give you some concern that they might be putting a system in place that's not effective?
Well, the Pentagon has not said that their tests have been failures. The Pentagon has said that the testing has been limited and for very specific functions of the overall system. And that's the case in any new technology. When we bring on a new aircraft, we bring on a new technology, we do flight testing, and it doesn't always go perfect. But the fact is we're moving toward a capability we've never had before. It's important. And we also send a signal just by deploying it, because by deploying a system, we've taken away the psychological advantage that countries have, thinking they can back us in a corner because we have no capability, and make them think twice about ever using an offensive ICBM against us.
We're talking about missile defense with Representative Kurt Weldon, the 7th District in Pennsylvania, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. What about the argument that says that, Congressman, that says that, you know, missile defense is not where we should be putting our money right now because we're dealing with the war on terror? And I mean, the terrorists are probably not going to deliver their weapons by a conventional intercontinental ballistic missile.
Well, we are working on it. In fact, all during the 90s, when the Clinton administration opposed missile defense, it was the Republican Congress that plussed up our defense budget by $43 billion over 6 years, and we plussed it up largely in the area of conventional threats and the threats against the possibility of a loose nuke or a chemical or biological agent. We have been working in that area. But, you know, what price is New York City worth? Is it worth $100 million? Is it worth $500 million? Because one ICBM with one nuclear capability would cause damage that we could never begin to calculate. And the fact is, it's not just a deliberate attack. You know, the Russians have, at least on two occasions, gone on full alert to where their ICBM offensive missiles were within a matter of minutes from being activated. If just one of those missiles gets activated by accident, not deliberate, but by accident, up until now we've had no capability to shoot that missile down. this system will give us that capability. So we're not just talking about deliberate. We're also talking about the possibility of an accidental launch. In fact, it was in January of 96 when the Russians, Norwegians lost launched a weather rocket into the atmosphere. The Russians mistook it and actually activated their Chagats, which control their offensive ICBM system. It was in a matter of minutes before they would have moved to the possibility of an offensive ICBM pre-programmed to hit an American city to have been launched.
Well, let's take one quick call from one of our listeners, Michael in Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to the program. What's your question?
Hi, this is Michael in Boston. And, you know, you just kind of spoke to my question a second ago, but I've never heard anyone talk about the whole concept of missile defense being almost a space age Maginot line. In the 1920s and 30s, France spent a huge amount of money on defending against the last threat, World War One. I mean, aren't we just doing the same thing and mulling ourselves into a false sense of security? Do we really worry about terrorists having missile silos for ICBMs or some kind of nuclear threat in a suitcase? And I'll take my comment.
Okay,
your comment,
Michael, thank you. Congressman Weldon, what about that?
Well, I was the one who exposed the loose nuclear threat in 1997 with General Alexander Leavitt on one of my 38 trips to that country, so I know something about the possibility of a loose nuke. We're not talking about a current terrorist like Al-Qaeda having an ICBM. We are talking about North Korea having an ICBM, which in August of 1998, they launched over the sovereign territory of Japan. Following that test, which we were not aware of in advance, the CIA reversed its opinion and said that missile, if it had gone completely to its end, would have been able to hit the continental U.S. We're talking about that kind of a nation. Iran has just completed the Shahab 3. They're moving to develop the Shahab 4 and Shahab 5. They are medium and long-range systems that will eventually threaten not just us, but all of Europe. These are the capabilities being developed by nation states. While we have to work on the threats of terrorism, and I'm in the forefront of that as a member of the Homeland Security Committee and have been for the past 15 years, we also have to worry about the eventuality of a nation threatening us with a long-range missile. And to have us unprotected, well, a country like Russia has had a defensive missile defense system for the past 30 years. It's kind of ludicrous. And I've told my Russian friends, if you think missile defense is not appropriate, then take down your system around Moscow. And, of course, they've chosen to never do that.
I understand. Well, Congressman, thank you very much for joining us. It sounds like you have a bit of a party going there.
I'm at the airport, right? Where I didn't catch a plane.
Oh, okay. Well, good luck on catching your flight. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
My pleasure. Thank
Congressman
you.
Kurt Weldon is a Republican representative of Pennsylvania's 7th District and vice chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. Mr. Coyle, I hope you can stay with us. I'm sorry we didn't get to you during that segment. Do you still have a few more minutes? Well, he's gone for the moment. Maybe we'll get him back. And John Donnelly, I hope we'll stay here because we'd still like to hear from you about your thoughts about missile defense and what we might do about deploying a system. Our number is 800-989-8255, and you can send us an email at talk@npr.org. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington. We were going to be talking about the successful flight of Spaceship One, which actually, if you want to talk about rocket science that seems to be working, I guess you can take your hat off to them because this consortium led by the Rutan, or Burt Rutan, his rocket successfully made it into space a second time and won the X Prize. But unfortunately, the president or director of the X Prize Foundation isn't able to join us. Perhaps he's celebrating. I'm not sure. Maybe. I hope he's doing something fun. So anyway, he couldn't be with us. But for a few, that gives us a few more minutes to talk about another kind of missile issue, and that's the ballistic missile defense system. We're talking this hour with John Donnelly. He's a defense reporter with Congressional Quarterly. And on the line is Philip Coyle, senior advisor for the Center for Defense Information. And, of course, we want to hear from you at 800-989-8255. I'd like to take your calls, and let me go to Jade in Denver, Colorado. Jade, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
Whenever I hear military and complicated next to each other, it makes me a little nervous.
Because?
The things I'm wondering about, what kind of safeguards are in place to make sure that this is only going to blow up stuff it's supposed to blow up and not, say, Spaceship One, The other thing that I'm really wondering about, mention was made of an emplacement in Los Angeles, as in presumably in the L.A. metro area. How good of an idea is it to have a great big thing that explodes in a metropolitan area where someone could possibly, a terrorist, come in with a suitcase nuke and mess things up very, very badly? I'm happy to take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Okay, Jade, thanks so much for that question. Maybe Philip Coyle. I presume part of the testing is to make sure that these things don't launch accidentally.
That's correct. But Jade is correct. These systems are very complicated, and things sometimes do go wrong. For example, the Patriot system that was deployed in the most recent war in Iraq shot down a British Tornado jet, shot down a U.S. Navy jet, killing the pilots, and nearly shot down a U.S. Air Force F-16 jet, all friendly fire accidents. So things do go wrong with these systems.
I see. What about you, John Donnelly? Are you satisfied first of all, we haven't specified where in California this second installation is supposed to be, have we?
Yeah, Mr. Coyle mentioned it, Air Force Base, near Vandenberg Air Force.
Okay.
From Vandenberg.
So is there a concern that Jade should have or anybody else of living in Los Angeles because of this? And also, what about the Russians? I mean, I don't know if you know about this. If they have a system near Moscow, they must feel fairly safe about the concerns of having it broken into or something.
Yeah, I've never heard first of all, the Vandenberg facility is going to be as much of a threat as any number of other military facilities like San Diego and Norfolk. So, yeah, I mean, it's a potential place a terrorist might want to wreak some havoc, but so are any number of other places. As for the Russian system, it just defends around Moscow. It's not, it can't defend the entirety of Russia. So,
yes.
Mr. Coyle, go ahead.
Yes, and Russia does not have the capability, as the congressman suggested. Russia does not have the capability to shoot down ICBMs at all.
Huh. I was wondering, Mr. Weldon was talking about Congressman Weldon was talking about the people who were naysayers about testing. Did you think his comments were apt? It seems to me that testing is a normal part of any development, and people weren't. I don't remember hearing people say that you shouldn't test these things before you deploy them, or maybe I misunderstood him.
Well, of course, I've certainly never said that, and I don't know anybody else who has. Senator Reid was saying that indeed we need to test these systems. You'll sometimes hear people say, "Well, if we took this attitude, the Wright brothers still wouldn't have gotten their plane off the ground." But the Wright brothers knew that they needed wings on their plane, and unfortunately, this missile defense system is missing most of its major elements. So it's a little bit like deploying a new military aircraft, or the Wright brothers aircraft for that matter, without wings or a tail or landing gear, and without testing to see if it could work without the wings or the tail or the landing gear.
I see. Is there a testing program that could be designed that would work?
The testing program was going along just fine when I was in the Pentagon just a few years ago. But since the president announced his decision to deploy this system in Alaska and in California, the bottom has fallen out of the flight intercept testing program, and they haven't done a flight intercept test since, now nearly 2 years.
John Donnelly, what do you think that there's a system? Can we actually? Is there some point when you think everybody would agree that the system had been tested adequately?
Well, the real issue here is whether or not the office that Mr. Coyle used to run, the Operational Test and Evaluation Office, is going to be in charge of the testing. This is the office that the Congress set up in 1983 to fly before you buy. And the Bush administration has taken that office no longer oversees the test. They participate in the testing, but they're not the final arbiter of what the tests are going to be doing. And this is just one of several ways that the Bush administration has exempted the missile defense program from the usual acquisition rules. We do not know what the final architecture is going to be, like how many missiles are we going to have in this system. We don't know how much it costs. Every other weapon system has to tell Congress how much it's going to cost. This system has been exempted from that. What is the system supposed to do? What is its final technical requirement? They don't have to say that. They don't have to tell anybody that. And so they've been given carte blanche on a number of these elements. And the argument is that this is so urgent, the threat is so compelling. That's the reason why we have to jettison all the traditional rules that have protected taxpayers. But what a lot of people in our intelligence community are saying is that, no, a missile threat is, in fact, among the least likely ways that a weapon of mass destruction could be delivered to the United States.
Okay, I think we have time for one more quick call. I'd like to go to Doug in St. Louis, Missouri. Doug, welcome to the program.
Yes, I see time is short, so I'll try to be fast. I agree with the first caller who says that this is a huge transfer of collective taxpayer wealth from us to the military-industrial complex. And the problem is that a highly flawed system is just going to give us a highly flawed sense of responsibility. We have highly rigged tests, and some of those which can't even pass, and your pro-missile defensive guests are giving highly rigged answers to highly rigged scenarios. North Korea would never just launch one ICBM. It would launch a group of ICBM, and one ICBM and a group of ICBM with many dummies could get through to New York. In addition, I'm wondering if this system, how easily this system can therefore be overwhelmed because it does nothing to defend against radar-evading cruise missiles. It does nothing to defend against a whole group of missiles. All North Korea would have to do is to double its missiles, which it certainly is capable of doing, and have most of them be dummies.
Okay. Doug, let me get some answers there. Philip Coyle, I mean, is the system robust enough, or is this another system that has to be designed further down the road?
Well, the system has no demonstrated capability to work in realistic conditions. So it's not a question of not being able to defend against one threat or another threat. It has no demonstrated capability right now to defend against any threat in realistic conditions.
I got it. John Donnelly.
I wouldn't argue with that answer.
Okay. Well, Doug, I guess that's where we're not too promising at the moment. Anyway, I'd like to thank both my guests this hour. John Donnelly, the defense reporter with Congressional Quarterly, thanks very much for coming in. And Philip Coyle, he's a senior advisor for the Center for Defense Information. Thank you very much for joining us.
Anytime.
Earlier, we talked with Representative Kurt Weldon. He's a Republican representative of the 7th District in Pennsylvania and a big supporter of the plans to deploy a missile defense system, and also Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat from Rhode Island, who has been a rather large critic of the administration's plans. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.